This is Catherine O'Connell and welcome to Lawyer On Air. If you are looking for inspirational stories about women in law, then this is the podcast for you. Join me and my lawyer ladies as we enjoy a glass of wine after a hard day at work and talk about the world of women in law. It's my passion to share stories of amazing legal ladies who are working as in-house legal counsel, who have law firm roles, who are leading on boards and who are doing law differently. From time to time, I will also invite special guests on the show to share their insights on legal recruiting and tips for getting hired as a successful lawyer in Japan. I hope you will enjoy getting to know these amazing women who I am so proud to share a profession with. I'm glad you're here and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Lawyer On Air podcast. In this episode, I share with you another diverse story of a woman lawyer working in Japan. I'm Catherine, the host of the show, and I'm a lawyer based in Tokyo for more than 20 years, and I love helping unlock the wisdom of the stories that women lawyers never tell. What I've learned from my career so far in law is, if you know your style, then you can perform at your very best. If you don't know your style, you underperform and end up performing someone else's style. Well, those are the words of Aya Saito, who is my guest today. She is a director of legal at Boston Consulting Group. She's a qualified lawyer in Japan and a member of the global legal team at BCG. She's based in the Tokyo office supporting Japan and South Korea. She's also a mother to a four-year-old boy, and in her spare time outside of work, she enjoys spending time outdoors with her family, swimming, yoga, and traveling. You can check out Aya's full bio in the show notes. On this episode, Aya will share with us how the challenges she has had are her key accomplishments and were also what she enjoyed. Who amongst us can claim our challenges not only as our best accomplishments, but also claim them as enjoyable? How refreshing. Aya also shares her view that having lots of interests is a real strength to becoming a successful legal counsel in an organization. It means that you are not only able to do lots of different kinds of legal work, but you always have your team of other lawyers and management behind you, supporting you when you need it. She also shares how appreciating what she has now and who has helped her along the way means that she knows it is her mission to help other lawyers and to give back to the community through activities like the Bar Association. You'll also get Aya's top recommendations on how to get a clear vision for choosing your next role and being right in the position to seize opportunities. And finally, Aya will also share with us her favorite place to visit in Kansai area and the food that she would eat there, as well as sharing with us some other fun facts. Well, let's get into it. Hello, Aya, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Catherine. It's really great to be here.
Thank you so much for saying yes to coming on the show. And as always, the opening question is, if we were meeting up in person, where would we be? Do you have a favorite wine bar or restaurant or cafe that you love to go to? And what do you choose off the menu?
So I appreciate food, I think, more than drinks. So I thought about my favorite restaurant, and I think my favorite in Tokyo is a place called Ryukote. It's a Chinese restaurant in Kagurazaka.
Ooh.
Yes. It's family owned. I think it was a favorite of one of the former prime ministers of Japan, Tanaka Kakue. But it's a very sort of cozy restaurant which serves really good food, really homey atmosphere, and it's like kid friendly. So great restaurant that my family likes to go to.
That's great information. I have hardly ever been to a Chinese restaurant in Japan. That's my big confession, everyone. I've never really found anywhere that's been so delicious. So I love your suggestion.
Oh, okay,
that's great. Yeah, thank you so much. If you were having something to eat there, would you just simply have, you know, water, sparkling water with your meal, or would you choose something else?
Depending on my mood or company, I would have maybe a beer or maybe a lemon sour.
Ah, lemon sour. That's good one. Okay, so that's great. A beer is just, and now we're in the season where it's rainy season heading into summer. It's very hot, so it's really great to have one of those to drink, I would say. Yeah, oh, great. Thank you so much. Well, delving back into your childhood then, were there any careers or things that you were dreaming about then? I know a lot of people have said they wanted to be a flight attendant. It seems to be very popular, but how was it for you?
I really thought back about that.
Oh, tell us. Yeah.
And to be honest, I cannot recall ever wanting to be anything like a as a
Like
profession or
XYZ.
occupation.
Yeah, okay.
I do remember I wanted to travel. I wanted to see Europe. I wanted to see Egypt. I wanted to also drive, which is weird because I don't drive at all now. I'm a terrible driver. But it was more actions or specific things that I wanted to do rather than something I wanted to be. I can recall wanting to do certain things, but not really wanting to be a certain profession or a certain occupation.
That's really interesting. I love that. And what about Egypt? How did that come out?
So as a child, I was actually living in the US, and I'm sure I think I had some classes at school or something where we were, I think, learning about Egypt and in the
Ah,
pyramids and things like that.
right. That's interesting. I think when I left school, we had to write our little, what I want to do in 5 years' time in the back of the graduation book, and it was something for me was about Egypt. It was about going to Egypt, see the pyramids, and ride a camel. But I still haven't done that. So you've prompted me to think, when am I going to ride this camel I've been talking about for a long time? That's
Yeah,
really
never too late, I
interesting.
think.
Yeah, so you grew up in the States then.
But yes, that's right. When I was born in Japan, but when I was three, my family moved to the US and we moved to Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, okay. Wow, that would have been a big change from Japan.
Except that I didn't remember anything about Japan. So I was three when I went. My first memories were already in the US.
Oh,
So
I see.
yeah, growing up, I didn't really see myself as a Japanese. I just kind of thought I was American like everyone else.
Well, yeah, I mean, you were there. How long were you there for? You grew up there, but was that for until you were in your teens?
So just before my teens, I think it was when I was 12. My parents told me we were moving to Japan, and I just thought it was like the end of the world.
Right, because you're sort of going to this country where you've never lived before and you're already enjoying being in the States, right? And then, but you did come back to Japan.
I did. And I went to a school where I think maybe 60, 70% of the kids were kids who had lived somewhere outside of Japan.
Did
And
that
so
make it
there.
easier to come back into Japan to sort of edge your way in? Did it seem a little bit more comfortable?
I'm sure it did. And I'm sure that those were my parents' intentions as well. Yeah, but even so, I still had difficulty when I moved back. I wasn't great at Japanese. And even more, I think it was just the culture, the people, the way people think, the way people say things, just puzzling to me.
Yeah, puzzling. And also the way people don't say things is puzzling in Japan, isn't it, sometimes? It must have taken a little while to settle in, but then did you do the rest of your schooling here and then head to university?
Yeah, so I ended up going to a Japanese university because it was my school that I had gone to was an affiliated school of a private university in Japan. So I ended up going to a Japanese university, studied political science. I did want to go to the US though, so I did an exchange program and I went to a liberal arts college in Massachusetts for 1 year.
All right, what did you do there?
So the purpose of my study abroad for me was really to kind of see how I felt going back to the US. I had spent, my teens in Japan and didn't feel like I quite fit in, so I wanted to go and see how I would feel if I went back to the US. And so I just kind of went back to see how I would feel about maybe working or living there or, going back to school there.
Yeah, because it would have been different. Yeah, it would have been different from when you were up till, your teens, preteens, and that experience with your family and then going back by yourself, right?
So
Yeah.
to be honest, I wasn't really studying too hard. More enjoying myself, traveling a little bit also within the States, things like that. I mean, I took my classes, I completed them, I completed my year there. But yeah, it was quite different from my experience as a child because first, the location was completely different.
Yes.
I was in Massachusetts, which is very different from Texas. Also, when I was a child, I didn't really feel a lot of difficulty communicating or fitting in with my friends. But then I did go back when I was in university, and I think I did feel quite out of place again. So I had a bit of a sort of crisis in terms of
Right.
identity about because I always had kind of thought, oh, maybe if I go back to the US, I'll feel a little bit more comfortable about myself. But then I did go, and then it turns out it wasn't really the case. And it was good for me because I think I was kind of able to level set and think, oh, you know, maybe I'm just me and it's like my nationality or where I am doesn't really matter. It's just me being me and being comfortable in myself.
That's an amazing thing to recognize in yourself because this idea of crisis being two nationalities, two cultures has come up quite a bit for people who have spent time out of Japan, people who've talked on the podcast here. So it seems to me somehow you've got this level setting. I love how you called it that. But is there some way or some hint that you found really useful for you to do that level setting? How did you get to that point where, well, this is just me? Is there some, I don't want to say playbook, but is there something you could say that could help someone else who's maybe listening to this and is feeling that way?
I felt, okay, if I'm going to feel out of place wherever I am, if I feel different wherever I am, then just don't worry about the surroundings, don't worry about the noise, don't worry about the environment, just do as I please. I think it was just kind of just shut out the outside or stop blaming maybe the things that may or stop blaming, I don't know what the right word is, maybe
Can I jump in? It sounds
yeah.
like having a bit of empathy for yourself. That, not being so hard on yourself and realizing that actually being a little bit different is okay. It's not a strange thing. It's something that I can embrace. So I, just go with it. Does it sound a bit like that? Is that sort of what you're trying to say?
I think so. I think so. Yes. Yeah. Being kind to yourself or not beating yourself up for being different. And also, I guess not blaming others for not seeing you as you would like them maybe as well. I think so. I think it's both sides, you know, kindness for
Right.
yourself, but also for others.
Yeah, and that's quite important because this is something that I'm sure still comes up because you are, you're with Boston Consulting Group now and you're a lawyer there, but I'm sure you've got outreach into the States as part of the global team, but also into you look after Korea and Japan as well. So you've got this happening all the time and it hasn't gone away.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Yes.
But you probably deal with it a little bit better now, perhaps.
Of course, yes. I definitely think of it as a strength now more than something that makes me feel uncomfortable or
Yeah, there you
something that makes
go. It's a
me.
strength for you now, right? That's incredible how it's been. And maybe it wouldn't have been a strength, right? Maybe it would not have been a strength if you hadn't gone through those tough times.
Yes, that's true. I completely agree. So I can't say that I really enjoyed my time in the US that 1 year I spent there. I can't say that I found it super fun. I mean, I did enjoy the time there, but it was more of a sort of a, like an awakening or like a wake up call for me. Yeah.
Yeah,
So.
an awakening, a wake up call, because yeah, sometimes those times where we go and push ourselves into some other area, it's not fun. Not everything in life can be fun. And so it's from there though, this awakening, that's incredible, right? That you've got to this point now that it's a strength and you're utilizing it for yourself here. But when did then you think about becoming a lawyer? Was it while you were in the US? Is there somehow some recognition there that you thought law would be a great career for you?
Actually, no. So what
Love your
happened after?
honesty.
Yeah, so well, what happened after I went to the state? I came back to Japan and then I started really relishing Japan. I was like, oh, you know, Japan's such a great place. I really like it here. I actually like it here. But I came back. And then I came right back in my 3rd year of university. So that was right when Shushoku Katsudo, or the job searching for the new grad, started. And this was another life-altering experience for me because I think up to that point, I'd kind of lived like I'd lived in Japan, but I was living in a bubble where I was kind of protected, and in this bubble where I was living with similar types of people, people who had had experience abroad. And I was suddenly thrust into this system where where again, I just completely puzzled, did not understand. It was so confusing to me. I didn't understand what was going on with me at all. I didn't understand what the drivers were. I didn't understand what was being valued. And this whole thing was just really, I didn't get it. And I've always found it very difficult to act when I don't understand what's going around me. And so I did not really do well in this shushoku katsudo. But that was also because I wasn't trying, because I couldn't relate to what was going on. I didn't understand what was going on. I guess I didn't also agree to some of the things that were going on. And so I wasn't trying very hard. And as a result, I wasn't successful in shushoku katsudo.
Because that's such a big part of the first job in Japan scenario, yes. Isn't it? And it's... And I don't even know if anyone actually explains it. Are you saying then that no one really explained all of this?
So I think maybe perhaps there were resources at the university explaining things like that. I think maybe people also learned these things from their senpai.
The people just ahead of them, right? The people who've gone through that process themselves, who are just ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think you're right that perhaps there was some more sort of unwritten, passed down by mouth type of, or traditions, customs, understandings that I didn't have access to, and which, you know, could be on me. You know, I didn't go out to get that information, but I just didn't understand at all what's going on around me. I didn't understand the significance, the meanings of these things. Yeah.
Yes. And I think you put a finger on it there. What was valued? What was being valued by all these companies? They're not actually telling you that. And it seems like it's a conveyor belt of people going through, asking the companies the same questions. And really, it's a strange system in some way. Perhaps I too do not understand it well enough and need to do some study. But not knowing what they valued and just going through this rotation of process seems, now you've called it out, it seems really not the best way to approach obtaining your first role.
Right, yes. Another thing that really puzzled me was the way everyone wore the same outfit.
Oh, yes. That same, what is it, black, isn't it? Black outfit.
Yeah. And white with the shirt. Same hairstyle and the same type of bag. It was,
And what does that mean, though? Why is that the system? Just thinking about it. Why is it that you should all turn up? Is it because if you all look the same, then there's no judgment on people's clothing and appearance? If they look pretty similar, it's a way of indirectly putting people at a level pegging. I'm just on the spot. I hadn't thought about it before, but is it something like that?
I honestly don't know, but I think what you just said is a really pleasant way of putting it.
I'm a positive person, but it feels almost a little bit like, you know, people say, why do lawyers in, you know, England, New Zealand, Australia, and some don't these days, but when you appeared before the judge, you would wear a black cape and the wig, and you would all look the same. And I think that was basically to appear the same before justice, that there was no differentiation. You were all looking the same. And of course, there's something to do with wigs and being learned and well practiced. But the whole point was that you looked the same in front of the law, and there was no putting somebody else ahead of someone else. You were all the same and giving the same representation to your defendant or your plaintiffs. So I feel, in a way, perhaps that's what Japan is doing, is we're the same thing, so that we don't see you as wearing a favorite color that we like, or you're wearing a brand that we really love. Maybe that's part of it. I'd love someone to inform us what the situation is, but I'm going with that for my theory at the moment. You felt like you didn't do very well in that shushoku katsudo, in the search for the role. So what happened then?
Well, I did end up getting a job, but it was sort of as a paralegal / translator at a patent attorney's office.
Right.
And what I was doing there was mostly translating documents from Japanese to English for companies in Japan to file patents in the US or Europe or other countries.
Ah, I see. Interesting work.
Yeah.
But perhaps not you what you wanted to ultimately do.
Exactly. So I quickly realized that, you know, I kind of need to get serious and think about my career and what I want to do for and my life and what I wanted to achieve doing this job. Because I think the thing, what I thought then was that this job, you know, I do it fairly well, but I'm not challenging myself. I'm not living up to my full potential. I wanted to have more control over my life. And those were the things that were running through my head as I started this job. I was at it for a couple of years, but this was what I was thinking.
Mm. Did you have anyone helping you at that time, like a mentor or anyone who maybe you didn't know they were a mentor then, but you look back and think, ah, that person was helping me?
That's exactly what I thought when I was looking back at my career and thinking. And I did have two mentors. And this is actually ties into why I became a lawyer, is that I think two things happened while I was in this job at the patent attorney's office. One was the law school system in Japan was established. And my father started encouraging me to pursue this because he saw I was unhappy at my current job.
Right. He could see you weren't happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I started remembering that I had a professor in university who teaches Anglo-Saxon law. He's an American man who kept repeatedly telling me while I was in university that I should be a lawyer.
Mm.
And he had said to me, oh, your brain is wired up to be a lawyer. And I never took it seriously.
What does that mean too? You know, you're wired up to be a lawyer. Wow. What does that mean?
Yeah, I didn't know at the moment.
Yeah.
And I always just thought lawyer, oh, that's such a high, lofty, you know, profession, so noble, nothing to do with me. You know, must be so difficult. You have to be super smart to be a lawyer. Oh, you know, no way that I could do that. But then when my dad started trying to encourage me to become a lawyer and I saw the new system and I started remembering what my professor had told me during university, I thought, wait a moment, maybe this is something I should think about. And then the second thing that kind of influenced me during this period was that through my job at the patent attorney's office, I had opportunities to meet other patent attorneys from different countries who would come and visit and maybe sometimes give us lectures or seminars. And I met a patent attorney from the US. She was an American attorney, a lawyer. Well, she wasn't actually American. She was originally from Vietnam.
Mm.
She was a mother. She was a partner at a large law firm, but then later she opened up her own practice. And she was just really charming lady. And I think looking back, she was probably the first female role model that I ever had.
Mm, nice. Are you still in touch?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's cool. And did you ask her to help you or did she just take you under her wing in a way and started encouraging you?
She didn't encourage me. I think it was more me. I reached out. Mm. I was like, oh, wow, I've never met anyone like this before.
Mm.
I reached out to her with my private email address. And yeah, I said, you know, I really enjoyed meeting you. And like, I hope we can keep in touch. And then so when she came back, she came to Japan periodically for various reasons. But yeah, she would let me know when she was here. And we kept in touch and met over the years. I don't think there was any specific really career advice that she gave me or any mentorship, but I think just catching up with her some once in a while, learning about her life, her career was a real sort of motivator for me.
They often say, don't they, that you, for someone to be a role model,
mm-hmm.
you can't be it if you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could see it. You could see someone there who was from a different country, who was a mother, but also a partner and seemed to be enjoying her work, right? She even set up her own practice. So you could yeah. see a potential, even if she didn't tell you, you should do what I'm doing. Mm. Did you actually get back in touch with your professor as well, that American professor?
I did. After I passed the bar exam, I did. I'm also connected with him on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. What did he say? I'd love to know.
Oh, he's like, I'm not surprised.
So. Well, there you go. I mean, that's amazing. What does that tell you then, though, about what you hear from other people, even though you don't know that you're mentors or that you learn along the pathway, right? That meeting different people and being in touch with them is such an important thing.
So I guess what I took out from my experiences there is one is that sometimes you don't understand your potential. People see it. May see things in you that you don't see yourself. And so it's really important to listen, I guess, to what people say about you is one thing. And I think maybe sometimes you don't appreciate what people are telling you in the moment. But looking back, you know, sometimes it can be really life-changing advice.
Absolutely. And imagine, though, if you'd said, what does wired up to be a lawyer mean? You know, that additional question. And then he might have said, well, you know, you've got this and this and this. And these things are skills that are really useful as a lawyer to help people. Mm-hmm. So I almost feel like it's that, yes, as you just said, you don't appreciate in the moment what you've been told, but you can always go back and even ask that question later on. Yeah. You said to me, I'm wired up to be a lawyer. What does that mean? It's never too late to ask a question. Wow, that's so fantastic. And I love the podcast here because I never know these things about people until you tell them. And this is the whole thing. There's so much wisdom in what you've said already. So you moved then from this, where you were in the private practice, doing the work that you were doing with that boutique law firm, and you joined an in-house role, right?
Yes.
Back in Tokyo.
Yes.
Tell us about that progression and what it was like as you were turning yourself into an in-house lawyer.
Right. I was working at a boutique law firm in Osaka. It was fun. We were supporting a lot of Kansai-based companies. I had the sense, again, that I wasn't really living up to my full potential. I felt like I could be doing so much more. And a large part of that was really my English communication skills. I felt like I wasn't utilizing them. And then the other part, I guess, was I wanted to be closer to the business. And I think this is something a lot of lawyers say when they move in-house. But for me, my father had been an executive at a Japanese company. And even as a child or as like a teenager, as a young adult too, he would often talk to me about things going on inside his company and what like management thinks about and things like that. And so I wanted to be somewhere where that was actually happening around me. I wanted to be a part of that. And so I was feeling like the law firm, the law private practice life wasn't maybe going to fulfill my needs or my desires in that area. And I was feeling, you know, again, kind of this, like, what do? I feel a little bit stuck. And then here again, someone helps me. I had a friend who used to be a former legal recruiter, and he suggested that I apply for an in-house counsel position with an MNC. I guess, you know, he saw that I wasn't happy, and he probably saw that my skills weren't being used in the right way. So I reached out to the recruiter that he recommended, spoke to him. Unfortunately, that position had already been filled. This position was in Kansai area. But then he said, I actually have a position in Tokyo for MNC that I think you might be a good fit for. And so at that point, I was like, you know, I have nothing to lose. Why not? I decided to apply. And within 1 month, I had an offer.
Whoa, that's amazing. And that's Accenture, yeah?
Yeah, that's Accenture, yes.
Wow, how exciting. And so you moved up to Tokyo and you started working with them. How was that? Quite different, I would say, from where you were in Osaka with the work you were doing.
Yes, it was so exciting. I felt so much more alive. I felt like I was doing well. I was enjoying working with so many people. I liked being part of something so dynamic and so something that was growing. And it was really big change for me. But I felt like, do you know that saying? I don't know if there's something similar in English, like a fish who has just gained water.
Oh, so sometimes we say a fish out of water. So you feel like you should be in the water and you've gone out of the water, or you're talking about a fish that's drunk too much water. Is that what you're saying?
No, I feel like I finally was back Yeah, so like a fish that was out of water goes back into the water, then is
got
very,
it.
Yeah.
Swimming around the pond really nicely and enjoying the
Yeah.
everything that's in the pond, right?
Yeah.
You're back in the water where you and you can breathe and you can swim well.
Right.
Love
I
it.
might have gotten the phrase wrong.
No, I think you're right.
But
That's great. We can it's great visual. I can see you back
okay.
jumping back in the pool
Yeah.
and running around. Well, not running, swimming around. Yes.
Yes. Yes, it was great. My main work was really with large and complex transactions. I really enjoyed being part of like these deal teams where I work with consultants who are managing like the sales process. I work with finance people, people on the tech side who develop the solutions. So like together as a team, we go out, we sell these big deals and we negotiate them and close them. I went to client sites to negotiate deals and also did some traveling when I was there. And yeah, it was really great. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it's great too, isn't it? When you sort of finally feel you're in your zone and you're
enjoying
your work.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I was like, oh, yeah, this is the type of place that I thrive. This is where I'm sort of meant to be or I should be.
So you're working as a proper lawyer here, right? And so is it, like you said before, a high, lofty, what did you say, noble profession where you have to be super smart? Tell me.
No, it's not, I think. But I think the skills that you need as a lawyer were probably quite different from like what I had thought you needed. So I think the image of a lawyer and what a lawyer really is was actually quite different.
In what way? What did you think? And what's the actual?
So I think when you're a lawyer, what's really important is just communication skills and problem solving mindset. But again, you know, I think it also depends on which area of law you're or what kind of position you're in or what type of area you're handling or what kind of work you're doing. Again, it depends. But I think specifically for in-house and especially in a global company, I think the communication skills and the problem solving is really, really the key sort of skills that are necessary.
Need, yeah. Right, that you need. Absolutely. I mean, communication skills, I think, are key to any kind of work, but especially when you're dealing with people across cultures and across languages like you are and different kinds of people in different teams, right? Consultants, finance, tech people. Yeah. So anything that stands out there that you're really proud of during that time, or perhaps that you might have found a challenge there that you overcame?
So I think for me, the challenges that I overcame are kind of like my key accomplishments as well. And it's also what I enjoyed. So for me, what was interesting and enjoyable and challenges I overcame were really kind of doing these new types of deals where there was no precedent and taking a new approach or a new business model and turning that into a contract. And then not even just a contract, but actually helping teams shape their service through the contract negotiations. Because when you are giving advice on contracts, you ask questions like, okay, but then how does this work in practice? Or what are you going to do in this situation? And then I think it gets people thinking about how they're going to actually perform or deliver the services. And I did several sort of new types of service models that had not been done before. And I was leading contract negotiations for these. Those are, I guess, the kind of the challenges, but then the fun things that I did while I was there.
Wow. I absolutely love what you said, that your challenges are your key accomplishments and also what you enjoyed. I don't think I've heard anyone say that before.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that your challenges are your key accomplishments. That's fantastic. But also on top of that, you enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is really magical, honestly. And I think too, the way you've talked about turning a contract into something that the teams then shape their service that they give.
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant. I mean, how many lawyers think about work in that way, that they're bringing out a new kind of service model, they're creating something and they're changing the way that people are doing work. I think sometimes we might as lawyers get chugged into just doing the day to day and getting the contract done and out there and next job, do the contract, next job. But you're talking here about being really creative and thinking and designing a new way of doing things that really help the business perform their services even better than they did before. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of power actually in contract negotiations, I think people often think of it as a way to mitigate risk or to document agreement and also make sure, you know, you get paid and it's for safety.
Exactly. There's the power, right? There's the power in those things you talked about. Plus, you're saying there's power in other things.
Exactly. So I think there's a lot of power in asking questions, because I think sometimes you can't actually put something into writing unless you actually can visualize and image what's going to happen. Like, what's the flow? Mm-hmm. What happens in this scenario? And then if you ask a lot of questions, sometimes the people who are actually doing the work haven't even thought about it.
Absolutely.
And then when you ask the question, they're like, and then they'll change things around, or they think, okay, yeah, that's, you're right, there's something I need to do there. So when I was working at Accenture, I felt that I was a part of something much bigger than just being a lawyer and drafting a contract. I felt like I was part of a team who was delivering work and value to clients.
Yeah, you really felt that, right? Not just saying it as lip service. You can actually feel the difference. And even that face that people have when you ask them a question and they start going, huh, thought of that, and you then start getting into a conversation, that's when you really get your richness from the work that you do. Mm-hmm. And you feel this connection with your people that you're talking to. And they obviously can see that you're not just doing it, as you just said, you're part of a bigger thing, not just drafting a contract. Lovely. I love that. That's real absolute gem there. Anything else about that role that you wanted to bring up?
No, I really liked it. It was so much fun. I had a great time. It was
I love it. I don't hear people say very much. I mean, inside, outside the podcast, that they have fun. And I think that's absolutely amazing that you did that. And where did you go then? After that, you didn't stay around there, even though it was fun. You worked on further on yourself and on your career.
Right. So I think after about 5 years, I was having a lot of fun. I was doing well. But so the better I did, I felt like there was this path that others wanted me to take. And I kind of looked at it and I thought, is this what I want for myself? And I think it was very quickly a no for me. And so I thought, you know, if this isn't necessarily what I want, then what do I want? And then I kind of went back to my original reason for being a lawyer. And yeah, I mean, I was reaching my 10 years, you know, 10 years after qualification mark. And I was thinking, you know, what do I want for myself looking ahead, going further into my career? And what really helped guide me was though really like my motivation. Why did I become a lawyer? And so I went back to my original thinking and I thought, okay, why did I become a lawyer? What did I want to accomplish? Have I accomplished it? And if not, you know, what is missing? What do I need to get there? And I started just really kind of doing this exercise in my head about thinking and thinking and thinking about what is it that I want? What's my next move? And it took a while. It wasn't something that I came up with instantly. It was something that I was kind of thinking about over the course of, I think, maybe a year or 2 years.
That's interesting, right? So what is the difference then between these others, whoever they are, suggesting you take a certain path and you going back to your original reason? What's the difference there?
So I became a lawyer because I wasn't really sure like what it was that I wanted to do. I wanted to do all kinds of things. I've always been interested in lots of things, but never enough to be able to dedicate myself into one space. So, and I think that's actually my strength. I have a lot of interests. I'm able to jump into anything. I'm able to enjoy anything. So I wanted to do a lot of things, but my current role at my company, which was a very, very, very large organization, was that your specialty is one part of legal. And I wasn't able to work across all the different areas of legal inside the company. And so I thought, wait, I wanted to do all these kinds of things when I became a lawyer. But looking back at my career, I haven't done this and this and this and this. There's so much I haven't done yet. And that was, I think, the gap.
Right. I see. So you wanted to do more, not just your speciality of one section. Right. It was a little bit of a silo And you could continue there and continue going deeper into that speciality. But being a person who wanted to do, or who always had lots of interests, that you wanted to sort of broaden those interests and do a little bit of a broader role.
Yes.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense. So that explains to me absolutely why you are where you are now.
Yeah.
The link is so obvious.
Right. Well, and I was very deliberate here, though. I came up with a very clear vision of what my next position should be.
Oh, tell us about that. That sounds so exciting. I don't even know if anyone's done that before. I suppose they have. Some people are very method-based and do that, but you had a clear vision of your next role.
Right. So over the course of several years that I had been thinking like about my next step, I had been thinking, okay, what's a good position that will get me to where I want to go? And for me, it was, you know, first of all, obviously I had to be a global company because that's where I felt a lot of my strengths were, and not being in that kind of environment wouldn't bring out the best in me. So that was first and foremost. But I think the others were like, I wanted a smaller company where I was able to work closer with the management. And then this third position where I wasn't limited to one area of law.
Right.
Or one area within the scope of the legal team's work. But 2 months after I joined, you know, COVID started and I wasn't able to be in the office and kind of build face-to-face relationships. So I just took every opportunity that came by and kind of worked on it very, I guess, carefully to make sure that interaction was going to be something pleasant and good for whoever had reached out to me.
Winning during COVID would have been extremely challenging when you probably thought you were going to travel a lot, go to Korea, because you're looking after Korea. And, you know, do a lot more than what you thought. But that would have been a very challenging time. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think the other thing was really kind of being comfortable with my style and myself. I think people work in different ways. I think some people are very comfortable with going out there and putting themselves out there and saying hi, hello to everyone. And saying, you know, this is the way it's going to be done, being forceful. But for me, and especially, you know, in Japan, it's probably not the best way to go about things. So I was very, I think, careful, I guess, about how I was working. I was observing more than maybe providing output. But that was my style, I guess. And I guess the fact that I kind of stuck and persevered with my style was also maybe what worked in my favor.
Yeah, I think so. And you're teaching people how to interact with you and where you stand and what you will do or not do. You're teaching them your style and helping them interact with you in that way and doing it, as you say, in a patient way and becoming comfortable with your own style so that others can also sit with you in that style that you've got and the way that you do your work. It's really interesting. So finish this sentence for me then. I want you to answer this question for me. And the most important thing I have learned in my career in law so far is?
Knowing and being comfortable with yourself and also being purposeful and having strategy about what you do.
Tell us a bit more about that. Both of those things.
So about knowing and being comfortable is, I think you perform your best when you're doing things your way, your style. But to do that, you know, you have to first know what your style is or how you perform best. And maybe, you know, how you perform best is not necessarily the way others want you to do things or is the way others would do things. But I think that's how you bring the most value, how you thrive, how you shine. And so knowing yourself and being comfortable and okay with that, you know, not shutting out the noise, not flexing and bending over backwards to meet others' expectations, kind of having your core and following your path is really, I guess, important for me.
That's brilliant. I mean, knowing your style so you can perform at your best and not trying to be another style, be another way. Have you got an example of how that's worked for you, where you've been your style and you've come through and thought, oh, I'm so glad I stayed true to myself in the way that worked out?
I can't think of a specific example, but there are instances where I have not agreed with what someone, maybe senior, has said, and I gave my view. And in the end, you know, I think it turned out for the better. I think that's happened before several times.
That's a great example. Yeah. I mean, one of the hardest things, isn't it, is agreeing with people or not agreeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier in some ways to agree, but to not, to take a different stance and disagree agreeably, right?
Yeah,
to
yeah.
be able to, I've heard it recently said, the nakayoku kenkasuru, right?
Oh,
to
that's interesting.
Fight,
yeah.
fight in a good way, right? Yeah. If you're adversaries, you're never really going to meet in the middle. But if you both have an idea of getting to the same point, you can have a debate or a dispute, or if you want to call it a fight, right? A kenka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But doing it nakayoku, doing it in a really good way, together kind of way. I think that's sounds like what you're getting to.
Yes.
Really interesting. Wow. And I know too, from here, you've also, just taking a different tack, you've talked about in your bio, when you sent it through to me, that you've been also authoring some books with some other Bengoshi, other lawyers as well. So you're taking some of this value in your style into authorship as well.
Yes. So I think one of the pitfalls of in-house is that you get really good at internal work. You get good at the organization. For example, like I felt at one point I knew the rules of the company really well. I mean, I knew the limits of the rules. I knew how to get exceptions to the rules. But then you think, okay, if I take one step out of the company, what does this mean? Maybe it doesn't mean anything, you know, if you step out of the company. And so for me, I've always been very kind of, I've tried to go out of my way to do professional activities that are unrelated to my job. The purpose of that is really to stay relevant as a Bengoshi, as a lawyer outside of the organization that I'm in. And when I was at Accenture, I joined this study research group within the Daiichi Tokyo Bar Association. And it was a group where we were studying about like laws and new developments, like new legal developments in IT. And as part of participating in this group, I was able to participate in several book publications with other lawyers. And it was a lot of fun. And very challenging also, but it was a good opportunity to do research, also to know about what the process is like for publishing a book. It was just a good learning experience, and I also got to meet some other lawyers who were pretty cool.
That's so cool. I loved how you said you are doing these professional activities unrelated to your work.
Yeah.
To stay relevant to your work.
Yeah.
So many people would do work that was related to their work to continue going deeper into their work, but you're talking about unrelated things. That's quite a different perspective. What else do you do then that is not always related directly to your work? I know when we first met, you were at the Women in Law Japan event, right?
Yes.
We were for International Women's Day this year in March. We were at Nishimura and Asahi, and we just had some amazing discussions go on there, and that's where I met you and invited you to come on the show. And you were basically a yes then, I think. You're a bit surprised that I asked you, but you were a yes. So was that a similar kind of activity that was not directly related to your work, shall we say, but was relevant to your work?
Yes, it's something that I've actually been really interested in over the past couple of years. And right now, so I'm a member of the Gender Equality Committee with the Daiichi Tokyo Bar Association. And it's something that's really kind of started to, I guess, interest me. Gender equality, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, these topics have been really interesting to me over the past couple of years. Now, I have a lot of respect for people who've been able to do that from an early time or early point in their career. I've only just really started to appreciate the importance of these things. And I think that's because I've kind of reached a point in my own career where I know what I'm doing. I think before that, I've always just been trying to figure out what I'm doing. But now that I think I know where I'm headed, I feel more grounded. And I also feel that because maybe having a career that's been kind of, you know, I think semi-successful, I have more influence, right? And I feel like that there's things that I should be doing, giving back for others, because as I told you through this discussion, that there's really importance of people supporting you, like in your younger years, even though you don't know that the support is great, or you don't realize it's support, or you don't know that it's going to be life altering, or you don't even know if it's really a role model. But I think just having different people look out for you who have more experience, it's something that's really important for developing careers of people. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's almost like, you know, my next question, what is your advice for younger lawyers? But I also want to say, hey, Gender Equality Committee at the Daiichi Bar. I'm also in Daiichi. I should join you on the committee.
It's really interesting.
If they'll have me.
Yeah, it's very interesting. At the moment, we're updating or drafting the next gender equality plan for the next 5 years for the Daiichi Bar Association. And we did kind of a look back last week about what's been accomplished over the last 5 years. And we also did like a review of all the new gender equality plans for the other bar associations. And it's really quite revolutionary, like how much progress has been made in the past 5 years. That being said, I think there is still a lot to be done for the legal profession in Japan. And so, I'm hoping that maybe some of my insights or my experiences working in global companies can help shape some of the new initiatives that we take on at the Bar Association.
Yeah. I absolutely think they can. And I think we should join on this together. It might be too late for me to join, but let's talk about it after the podcast, how that could work. But let's jump in then again to that. You know, you said when you are at this age and this strength that you've got, that you're grounded and you appreciate the importance of all these things that are right now, you look back and you think, there were those people who supported me when I was younger. We didn't know, we didn't appreciate it, but we do now. And I think that's what we get from growing a bit older and wiser, is we do know that people who are coming up need the help, even if they don't realize it or appreciate it then. Mm-hmm. It's important to know, as older people in our careers and our age, to give back. Absolutely, as you said. So what would you say then for young lawyers who are coming up, or students who are coming up through their careers? And there may even be some specific advice for women lawyers, but what would you say to them as advice for young lawyers?
I think take time to think with yourself, take time with yourself to know yourself, to learn about yourself. I think that will always lead you in the right direction.
Great. That's great. I mean, yes, it will. But sometimes we may not know that, right? How to take time with yourself. But I absolutely like that. It's like becoming and even sitting there and actually thinking about yourself and asking people what they see in you. You know, people around you, what do they actually see within you, and learning from those ideas. Wow. Is there anything else today, Aya, that we didn't touch on or that we skipped over that you wanted to go back to?
So I just wanted to say, I guess, that I think really, I mean, it just ties into what I said about the advice to younger lawyers, but I think really like knowing what you want, taking time to think about what you want, what makes you happy, what you like to do is really important, because I think you need to have sort of a goal or a mission or a purpose or something that you're working towards. And I think everyone has that. They just maybe haven't identified it. But I think once you identify, like, I think you see when an opportunity that's going to take you there pops in front of you, I think you're able to recognize it. While as if you're not sure where you're heading, it's difficult to know when an opportunity presents itself in front of you. You don't know if it's the right one. You don't know. It's hard to make decisions, I think. And so that's something I think I feel has worked well for me over my career.
Right. Yeah. Because you are someone who worked out by taking time with yourself, knowing and learning about yourself, to know when those opportunities came up. It was the yes, you could say it, or a no. And there were some where you said earlier, you know, people thought you should take a certain path and you were like, no, it's not what I really want to do. You already had a certainty about your pathway that you wanted to take because you had taken time to know yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, very, very good. So Aya, before we head into the final part of the podcast, I wanted to ask you a few other questions about your experience today. Are you okay for me to ask you some more questions?
Yes, of course, certainly.
All right. So, do you remember when I asked you to come onto the podcast, where we were and how you felt in that moment? Were you excited or shocked or curious? How did you feel at that time?
Well, I had listened to some episodes of the podcast and I really enjoyed it. I loved the concept of it and the purpose of the podcast. So when you asked me if I would like to be a guest on the podcast, it was sort of an instant yes for me. If I think about why it was a yes, it's because I really love the concept of your podcast. Often when we hear about women and their careers, we hear about these super women, you know, who are super successful in very senior positions. You know, they have several kids too on top of that, and they also look great, and they also seem to do it very easily. I've had trouble relating to some of these stories. I feel like, oh, I could never be like that. And sometimes these stories actually make me maybe feel a little bit worse about myself, actually, because I feel that I'm not successful in the way that these people are. But I feel everyone should be proud and confident about their own careers. And so I've always felt there's a need for diverse role models, more stories and examples of women with different career paths and life stories. And so when you asked me to be a guest on the podcast, I thought, you know, this is exactly what your podcast does. I've always thought that the more stories, the better. Every single story counts. Every story matters, even mine. And really, this is just my chance to practice what I preach. That is why I think I said yes to your podcast.
When you asked me. So great. I'm so glad I asked this question. And I'm just, my jaw is actually dropped hearing you say these things. You're so right. We hear so many stories of super, super, super amazing people. And those stories are great to listen to as well. But just hearing average, ordinary, normal people's stories is exactly, you're right, the purpose, the concept of this podcast.
Yes.
And I never knew that it was meant to be that. I didn't know that it would be this for everybody. And I didn't really know it would be that for myself as well. Because some people, for example, look at me and think, wow, Superwoman, got it together. Mm-hmm. But there have been a couple of episodes, and especially the most recent one, where I've declared, hey, it's not always as you seem, and we should really be telling that variety of story. Every story matters, even mine. I just, that's captured it. Thank you so much for saying that. I'm so glad you said yes, and that you'd probably, maybe you prepared in advance by actually listening to podcasts or the episodes, because I was going to ask you before we recorded what you mentally or physically did to prepare. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you'd already done that by being a listener from several months back, and that was your actual preparation. You already were ready to say yes. Did you do anything else that you can think of to mentally or physically prepare for the episode?
Well, you're right. I listened to podcasts of your previous guests, and then I think I was thinking when I listened to these, oh, what would I say to this question? Or how does this person's experience, have I had something similar? Or what would I have done in this situation? I think I had these mental exercises where I was looking back on myself, thinking about my own experiences. But in addition to that, I did write down what I, about all the decisions I think that I had made when I were at crossroads, when I had a fork in my path and I didn't know which way to go, or also what my drivers were or what influenced me in various situations where I made different decisions. I did look back and think about that. If I could do something more or something better, I think it would have also helped if I had maybe actually spoken these words and practiced. I think it's actually quite different to think about things in your head as opposed to actually saying words out loud. I think there's a lot of power in that. Sometimes there's a disconnect. It doesn't come out in the words when you speak it as you had thought in your head. And also, I think this form of podcast where it's a conversation between you, the host, and me, the guest, it makes the story much more impactful. It gives depth to your story. It creates connections with the real world. And also, there's maybe some unexpected twists and turns, and sometimes you're not able to maybe say everything you wanted to say, or say things in the way you wanted to say, or maybe you forget to say things that you wanted to say. And so just talking, saying things out loud, I know it's embarrassing to talk to yourself, but yeah, that would have been something I think would have been helpful as well, though.
That's excellent, because speaking it out loud is always very different to your head. And that goes for everything that we do. Often we'll write an article, for example, and then you try and say it out loud and it's like, that doesn't sound quite right, right? Or we're about to do a presentation to clients or internally and you go, that just sounds fake. It doesn't sound quite right. So you're so right. When you say it out loud, it becomes real and you're thinking, hang on, that I could say that a little bit differently. Or it's not about perfection. I think you're not saying that. It's just practicing so that you can be a little bit more confident, but also you just, it is different within your head to when you say it out loud. And I loved how you said it's got lots of power. There is a lot of power in doing that.
Especially when it comes to yourself. I think when you think, you kind of have tunnel vision. But through a podcast where we're interacting with a host and actually talking, I think it broadens your perspective as well as you speak. But it also makes your story a bit more relatable to others as well, because you're creating a connection with the outside world as opposed to something just in your head.
Right. And what I like about the podcast format, as you said, it's conversational. And sometimes when we're having conversations, we start a sentence and we don't quite say it right and we have to restart. Or we're partway through something and our mind goes blank, or we get a bit confused and we have to stop and say, hang on a minute, let me say that again. So that's what we do on this podcast. And you know, as we've been recording, even though this will come out perfectly because we've got Jane helping us with all of the tech and making us sound perfect, the thing is that we have stopped all the way through it. There have been bits and pieces where we've rephrased, and maybe people who are listening don't know that that's what happened, but that's a secret behind the podcast.
Yeah.
We're not live like on CNN. You get to breathe, you get to think, you get to stop, you get to restart and answer. So when you're reflecting on your career path, you might realize something else. So that's often why I also ask that question, is there anything else you wanted to say, or is there something you said before that you want to add to or reemphasize? And that's exactly why I do that, that you've got another chance to say, yeah, you know, before I said this, I just want to add a little bit more to that. So what did you enjoy most about recording today with me?
Well, first of all, just having a conversation with you, I think it's been very insightful. Very fun. I think it's, I feel that I've learned a lot from the podcast, but just speaking to you today. And part of that is, I think as I spoke, I kind of realized that, you know what, I've made a lot of mistakes in my time. I've made maybe some poor choices. Maybe I've been immature or naive in the past. But as I've spoken about my journey, I kind of think now, but you know what, I'm learning from them. And look at me now, like I'm doing pretty well. Despite my mistakes, you know, I make mistakes, I learn, I march on, I bounce back, you know, maybe I'm a pretty resilient person, you know, and I'm also comfortable with myself. So I think speaking through my whole journey or my whole path, I think there's new realizations, like we just said, through the conversation.
Right, new realizations, right? You've had learning about yourself. And yeah, exactly. You probably may not have called yourself resilient before, because we sometimes think about that as a word towards other people, but in doing this conversation, and I hope other guests get to feel this as well, you are actually very resilient. We all are, in the way that we've gone through these challenges. And I know you've mentioned challenges have been some of the enjoyable parts of your life, which I haven't really heard anyone really say in that way. And I think that's incredible.
Yeah. And I think that's also one of the highlights of the conversation, was that how you said that you've never heard someone say that. And for me, it seems like that's always been the way I've been. And so nothing unusual for me. But you've spoken to so many guests, you've spoken to so many other women, other lawyers, and you've said that, you know, no one has really said that before. It makes me feel special. Like, oh, maybe there's something special to me. Maybe there's something unique about me. And I think that's really boosted my confidence throughout this conversation.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, being you is your superpower. Mm-hmm. And so what you tell others is also going to help them to find their superpower. And that's, again, being themselves. Mm-hmm. And so they will say things that are similar to others, but they will say also some different things. And you've done that today. I really appreciate it. Do you have any question for me?
Oh, yes. Let's see. Maybe you've spoken about this before, but why did you start this podcast, and have you made any adjustments, changes to the initial purpose of your podcast, or has that been consistent?
Wow, many questions.
Yeah, sorry, that's a lot of questions.
No, very good questions that. And it's a great timing to say those questions too. So as I've always said, and it was, I think, the lovely Sarah Bull, who's a friend of mine, who told me about a book that was called More Than Enough. And inside that book, there's this quote: there is so much wisdom locked up in the stories that women never tell. So the stories that women have not been telling in this legal community has exactly been the reason why I've been doing this. So I actually had an idea to do a podcast back in 2018 when I talked about it with Jane on her own podcast, Transformations with Jane. But I didn't know what I wanted to do it about. And I knew that I didn't want to talk about just pure black letter law topics, you know, license agreements or those sorts of things. And some people said that would be a great topic to do, but it didn't really feel right to me. And so when Jane actually said to me, you know, do you have 10 or so people that you could interview? And I said, yeah, sure. And, you know, what would you like to speak to people about? And I said, well, I'd love to talk to women lawyers, but would they talk to me? And she said, why don't you just try it? So really, I got a great sense of ease by knowing that I could take 10 people as a season and speak with them, give it a try. And if it didn't work out, that's it. I've done 10 episodes. I've talked with somebody and another person, and maybe it wasn't going to succeed, or at least I've captured something and given it a try. And that was the important thing, was to give it a try and actually get over that hump of starting. Yeah. So during the podcast, have I made some changes? Well, I used to do a really large introduction of the guest at the very beginning and then start with, hi, welcome to the show. But now, as you noticed today, I just went straight in and did a hi, welcome with you. But then at the end of this, I will be recording an introduction where I've taken out some of the key points from your episode and use them at the front to tell people what this episode's going to be about, what you are going to talk about, and what I picked up. So that's been a recent change, that I've now put my insights at the front end of the podcast. So anyone who's listening or picks up this podcast can go, oh, if I listen to this, I'm going to hear how I can turn my challenges into exciting parts of my life, and that they become the things that I've most enjoyed about my life. That's interesting. I'm going to listen to this person, right? So that's one thing I've done. I also introduced the way of doing feedback through a voice email on the website. So people can go over to my law firm website, find the podcast, scroll down, and then they'll see leave a voicemail about Aya's podcast. They can just record a minute of their voice. And so we share that voice out there. So it's great getting comments on Apple Podcasts or Spotify with written comments about what people thought. But when you hear someone tell you in their own words, right, what they thought about your episode, that's even more impactful to hear someone's voice. And I think the other thing I've done too, Aya, is to add in the voices of male people, that sounds weird, to add in the voices of our male allies. I grew up in a family with three brothers, and so men have always been supporters of me throughout my whole life. And I thought there's probably a chance here for men to have a say, and they had so many insights. I've had managing partners from firms, recruiters, and they've been very popular episodes because just under half of my listeners are men. And they are men working in different industries. They're CEOs, they're hiring managers. And so I think it's really important that women also across law and other industries hear this input as well. Otherwise, we're missing half the conversation, right? So we have a lot of rooms where men are only there and women's voices are not heard. So they miss out on half the conversation. But I think on the podcast, it's important to have men speak so that we can get the other half of the conversation as well.
Oh, I love all of them. I love how you said, just give it a try. If it doesn't work, you know, you can readjust. That very much resonates with me.
Yeah, thank you for that. And also, you know, it's important that these are conversations. Some people say they're quite long. Well, you know, listen to 30 minutes before lunch or over the lunch one time and then after work, right? Split it in half so that you're sort of excited to listen to the other half later. They're not meant to be listened to all at once unless you've got an hour sitting there with a coffee or a glass of wine and you are enjoying it as if you're listening to our conversation at a virtual wine bar. That's the whole concept of it, right? That you're listening into this conversation between Aya and Catherine. Mm-hmm. Wow, I never would have heard that if I hadn't kind of pulled up a seat next to them at the bar and was listening to what they're talking about. So it's kind of that. So just, you know, take your time to listen, break it up if it's easier for you to do. But these certainly are not going to be any shorter because you can't have a conversation with someone and get really into the depth that we did today mm-hmm. without having so an hour's worth of talking. Well, thank you so much, Aya. That's really great. I really appreciate you answering these extra questions that I wanted to ask you today. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I am going to wind up the podcast now with you. We'll talk after this a little bit more, but to wind it down, I normally talk about some more lighter questions, right? Yeah. So I'm going to ask you your favorite Japanese food because I have to ask you that question.
Oh, it's very hard, but I would say kitsune udon.
Kitsune udon?
Yes.
Do you know what? If I'm choosing udon, it's always kitsune udon.
I love it. Yeah, I was born in, you know, I was born, lived a lot of my life in Kansai. So yes, good kitsune udon is one of my favorite.
Yeah, that's where I grew to love it as well when I was working in Kansai as a lawyer there. And that was what I chose when I was at the staff cafeteria. Oh. It was always kitsune udon.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. Place in Japan, perhaps it's the place in Kansai. Okay. Mm-hmm. The place in Kansai you most recommend people visit?
Oh, Nara, where I'm from.
Ah, yes.
Nara Why Park. Nara? So I think it's not as sexy as Kyoto, but it's very nice. Like if you go in the summer, there's large grassy mountains, a lot of deer, very nice old temples, which are not as flashy as the ones in Kyoto, but very, it gives you a very calm sense. And there's a lot of, and it's a very compact area, so you can take one day and look around and enjoy the deer and the mountains and the temples. It's very nice.
Yeah, it is very compact and it's laid out really easily. Not long ago I was there. And I was there with Jane, actually, who produces the podcast, and I'd won a hotel stay. And so we stayed in this hotel. It was lovely. Yeah. But very easy to get around. We went to a kind of couple of cafes. It was just so simple to move around and feel you'd actually got round Nara and could enjoy it even within a day. And another day would have been even better, but you can accomplish that within a day. Love it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of nice restaurants and hotels now too. So
absolutely.
Very great. Yeah.
Really nice. And your favorite saying, either in English or in Japanese?
So I don't have a saying, but I have a couple of things people have said to me through the course of my life that I kind of go back to guide me. And one is I think someone, a friend of mine had said, told me that Aya, you're good at enjoying anything.
Oh, gosh, that's good, isn't it?
And I took that as a compliment. And
brilliant. What a thing to say, right? That's just lovely.
Yeah. The other one is just my mother, who's very optimistic, just telling me, you know, just try it. If you don't like it, deal with it later. That kind of advice is something that she's given me throughout my life, which is also very kind of reassuring.
Yeah,
and helps me tackle challenges and enjoy it. So yeah, those are the I guess two things. They're not sayings, but, you know, things that people have said to me that I remember when I...
No, that's brilliant. It's things that have been said to you. They are sayings of others that mean things to you. And if you were not doing what you're doing now, what do you think you would be doing?
Oh, so my son is 4 and he is currently going through this phase of just loving animals. And we watch a lot of these nature documentaries together. And it would be really great to do some kind of work related to like animals or wildlife or like marine animals, something like that. So like a marine biologist or a biologist. Ooh. Would be very, very fun.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Isn't that interesting that you're getting that through your son?
Yeah.
Well, that's just amazing. Thank you so much, Aya. I've really enjoyed all you've talked about today on the podcast. It's such a pleasure to be able to speak with you in this way and connect.
Oh, and the pleasure was mine. It was so great to talk to you. And this experience has been really great because it just, you go back and look at all the things that helped shape you, the people who supported you, and a good way to rediscover yourself and what you believe in. So yes, thank you for the opportunity. You know, I should be saying the thank you.
That's wonderful. Thank you for just giving us a wonderful endorsement there. And for people who are interested in connecting with you and learning more from you, perhaps some of the things that you've talked about today, what's the best place to reach out to you? Would it be LinkedIn?
Yes, LinkedIn, please.
Great. We'll put that link into the show notes. And to everyone who is listening, if you did enjoy this episode, and I'm sure you did, and you're inspired in some way, please do write to us and let us know. You can drop a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can send us an email. We'd love to hear from you what you thought about the episode with Aya. And that's all from me, though, for today. And so I'll see you all on the next episode. Cheers, kampai, and bye for now. Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Lawyer on Air. I really hope that you were inspired by the story you heard and that you discovered something new about women in the law. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And if you can think of even just one person to share this episode with, that would make my day. I invite you to connect with me to talk more. Jump on over to LinkedIn or Instagram where you can find me, or send me a message via my website contact page. That's all from me today. I look forward to seeing you right here on the next episode of Lawyer on Air. Cheers, kampai, and bye for now.